show.
You too. I listened to your last episode in the car, and I was yelling and screaming because you were making me so angry.
His?
What? Ours. No. Your two. I wasn't in the last one.
Damn Art Majors. I was dying. Those two are very
I'm curious
correct.
What you were what you were upset about.
First of all, Foreigner, fuck you guys.
No.
Listen to me. I am a jukebox hero, and there are stars in my eyes, and that is my Foreigner rocks, and fuck you guys. Item number two, Carl got the Foreigner belt, and it was stolen by the Moonanites. It is a classic episode, sir. How about you watch some and broaden your horizons?
6 years.
Oh, suck it up and watch it. It's online for free.
A special guest, Gabe Dunson.
you saved your fart noise for my name. Thanks, daughters.
You're welcome. Comic creator Gabe Dunson. We are
this is only
today.
The third fart noise of the entire show, so you should be honored.
It got edited. We're still at two. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
The voice you're hearing now is James Dutters Dudley.
Hello.
And we also have, of course,
I'm back.
Aaron Early.
Hi.
And I am
Aaron
Adam
is particularly verbose. Like, I've been listening to the show and I'm like, wow, I wish Aaron would just tone down the volume and just use less words.
Yeah, sorry.
You've got thoughts and opinions and I'm interested and you don't share enough, man.
I thought I did.
Huh? You think you do, Captain Introvert. Yeah,
actually, now the last episode, Aaron did speak plenty.
Yeah.
But I wasn't there.
I noticed that too.
That was
it's nice to have you back.
Volume,
by the way,
turn the volume up on the show.
Yeah, you can actually have it because I don't interrupt people and blast out your speakers. Sorry, folks.
Oh, you're fine. Wait.
I was asking distance.
Oh, I mean,
I thought it was sign language or something. Yeah, like this
yeah,
is
well, this is
sudden sex.
That's microphone distance.
Anyway, we're going to start this episode the way we start every episode with me saying, we're going to start this episode the way we start every episode with what you drinking. So we're going to go around. Dutters, what you got?
I have, from your collection here, I have Atwater Brewery's Decadent Dark Chocolate Ale. Someone told me about it. It is unusual, to say the least. I'm drinking it, I guess I could say I'm kind of drinking it, I guess, in honor of, you know, Halloween and candy and everything, because this is really sweet.
Hmm.
This is a sweet beer. So if you do not like sweet things, you would not like this.
If you don't like sweet things, you don't like Dutters.
Speaking of sweet things, nice. You, Mr. Dunson, what do you got?
I'm drinking a Cheerwine because Cheerwine is badass. And also
okay.
because
it's made here in North Carolina.
You had it in your house, which
I
means
did.
That you are also badass.
I win.
I would like to plug something. What I've been drinking a lot at home, especially when I'm working, is the Antigua blend of the Oak City Coffee Roasters.
Oh, yeah.
They're in downtown in the Warehouse District, and the coffee is amazing.
What is the company name?
Oak City Coffee Roasters.
I haven't heard of them.
Apparently, you could just slap Oak City on anything. No?
Yes, you can.
Well, there's so many oaks in this city.
But
this is true.
Well, I noticed that particular Oak City everything trend didn't start until like the last 2 years, 3 years.
And we have Oak City Hustle, I think.
And when you're in Durham, it's everything Bull City.
Oh, yeah, but that's been going on since the
beginning.
That's
been for everything.
Good luck finding anything that's not bullshit.
What do you got?
I am drinking Coors Banquet.
Really?
As per usual. But I'm really excited to move on to...
I was going to say, you came in with like a bunch of microbrews.
Yeah, I've got a lot of different liquids that I'm imbibing at the moment. There's some nice cherry-flavored water, thanks to Adam. There's the Coors Banquet, and then I'm going to switch to the Bell's Winter White.
Nice. Dutters picked this out for me, because we were running behind. He ran to the store and grabbed me a Sierra Nevada... pale ale. It's pretty good. Been enjoying it. That was coming off a Corona. I didn't want to bring a Corona to the show.
No.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite pale ales. I don't drink a lot of pale ales.
No, it's good. Appreciate it.
If I'm going more broad.
Speaking of selecting beers for another person, I had the fortune of creating a mix pack for a friend who was having a gender reveal party.
Oh.
Him and his wife, they're having a baby, and they were going to announce the
I thought they were like, gender. He was announcing his gender. Like, that's... I have decided to become a woman. A gender reveal
party. Well, no, he said that he was going to get some surgery done over the weekend, and he wasn't going to be sure what he was going to come out as, but no. Their child, the gender of their child. Okay. So I
did not even know that was a thing.
I ran to the store and put together a mixed six pack of beers, and you know what I discovered? It was a lot of fun. It's kind of like the 2014 version of making a mixtape for somebody. You got to put something you like in there. You got to put something you think they would like. You got to have a little dark. You got to have a little.
Did you throw out duels in there for the wife?
No, I was thinking about getting her a sparkling grape juice drink. But then someone said that would be like I was making fun of her, so no, we did not.
But who said that?
Somebody.
Making fun of her, how?
I don't know. She didn't really
drink. If anything, bring her some like OJ and some sparkling and then combine and make like a virgin.
Yeah,
making fun of her would be putting an alcoholic beverage in there and saying that it's for her.
True.
Or putting something in there that would be like, it has to age for 9 months.
I like yours better, yeah.
So, yeah, making a mixed six pack for someone's a lot of fun, and I recommend it.
Word.
Especially the places that have like mix and match six pack for $8.99 versus other places where it's like build a six pack, we charge you per every bottle, beer that you put in there.
Yeah,
and then you get up like $37.
Yeah, and you're like, wow, I have expensive taste.
Well, right. If you go to a bottle shop, you've got to pay.
Yeah,
what the individual beers are going to cost.
Well, what's double cool about that is, like, especially in North Carolina, all over the place there's so many microbrews. So, like, if for any reason you take a trip to Asheville, you can come back with a six-pack of nothing but Asheville beers. Yeah. There's in Swansboro, there's this Sweetheart beer store that's got tons and tons of microbrews. And it's the whole point of the place is to get mixed six-packs. And directly next door is a wine store that's the exact same way. And then here in Raleigh, there's so many, you throw a rock and you hit a brewery, or you hit a building that will become a brewery tomorrow.
Asheville has more breweries per capita than any other place in the world.
That's true. However, Raleigh is catching up, and I don't know if that's a good thing.
North Carolina is actually becoming the new beer central for the United States.
The Triangle area, I heard, has taken that title recently.
Yeah.
I don't actually drink beer.
I listen to a show, it's something like 370,000, no, more than that. Maybe it's in $1 million of, like, money coming out of the beer industry for North Carolina's economy.
Hmm.
Like, there's a shitload of money out there for us from beer.
There's a lot of outer state companies that are coming in. Like, Oscar Blues is one of the biggest.
Yeah.
There's also a very small amount of international notoriety. I've got some friends who go to the big game convention in Germany, in Essen, Spiel. And they bring a six-pack of Duck Rabbit Milk Stout.
Nice.
And they trade it for shit. It's like, I'll give you a bottle for that $40 board game that I can only get in Europe. So
I just went to...
Is this during
Oktoberfest
or something?
No, it's during a board game convention called Spiel.
Oh, okay.
I went to Aviator Brewing again this weekend because I didn't have enough fun the first time. And actually, I had a different tour guide, and he told us that they actually just fulfilled a shipment to Italy.
Oh, really?
And a couple other China, Italy, and he said somewhere else, and I don't remember what it was. But fun fact, when they ship beer to China, it has to be shipped in lined cardboard because you cannot ship the metal over to China. They will not accept it.
Huh.
Yeah. We can take all of their metal, but they can't take ours.
That's weird.
And also I discovered that if you want to buy a bourbon cask, about a 56-gallon bourbon cask, they sell them for $100.
The barrel?
The barrel.
Cool.
Because they age a couple of their beers. The Black Mamba, they do a bourbon barrel age, and the Frost Nipper, they do a bourbon barrel age limited batch. And so when they're done with the barrels, they will sell them. So if you want a wooden barrel for only $100, which is a really good price for a whiskey barrel.
Yeah, the American taiko drums are made out of that thing, which is something I really wanted to do while I was in college, but I can't afford the cowhide.
Yeah.
Well, we've done a bunch of plugs before we've actually gotten to the plug section, so we actually have a couple more plugs to plug away here. If you tuned in last week, you now know that we have launched the new contest, the next sticker with Be Better. Oh, wait, sorry. Will Be Better contest. there was a typo in the first post that said with be better. Yeah. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm, the next. Mm-hmm.
So now the viewers are completely confused. Excellent.
Right.
We like to keep you on your toes.
So check the specs. We're looking for a 2x2 inch sticker incorporating the damn dog, the damn logo, whatever you want.
The word damn.
The word damn. 300 DPI. Send your image to damnartmajors@gmail.com. If you do, Aaron, what could they possibly win?
Love and affection.
He doesn't remember.
A kiss.
You can win an Oak City Hustle t-shirt. Your sticker will be made and sent to you. You'll get probably a couple more stickers.
You'll also get a custom illustration by all of us. Mm-hmm. We haven't decided yet if it's going to be your choice of what the subject matter is going to be, or if we're going to pick something out of our discussion for maybe one of the, dare I say, better episodes.
We could go for another Billy.
Another Billy Stration?
No, but not Billy Zane. I think we need to go for another Billy entirely.
Billy Corgan!
Or... I would just draw a
penis. Billy Mays. Let's do Billy Mays.
Here. Oh, yeah, but he always looks the same.
Yeah, but he's got different products.
It's easier to draw.
True.
Yeah.
Well, I did post posted a Imgur album link on both my Facebook page and the Damn Art Majors Facebook page. It just has a link to the album. It has the three templates on there. One of the painting of the dog. One of them is just a blank JPEG image. And the other is just our old sticker logo. Feel free to use it. Feel free to don't use it.
And once all the submissions are collected, we will go through them. You have till December 1st. So the whole month of November to get them to us. We will have a group of people judge
December
them.
1st at midnight?
Sure, December 1st at midnight.
All right.
Including ourselves, we will also
Eastern
judge
time. Midnight and, Eastern time.
And we will reveal the winner of the next Sticker Will Be Better contest during our Christmas show.
And then I'll reveal my wiener.
And I'll give you a coupon for a free Junior Frosty at Wendy's.
Oh man, you'd be an idiot not to participate.
Exactly.
Next plug, if you're in the Asheville area picking up that awesome six-pack of Mix Asheville beers, stop on by the Zappal Gallery. It's all sorts of comic art, all sorts of pop culture art. It's a lot of fun. It's a very different gallery. My work is still up there. This will probably be the last month that I will have my work up in that gallery, so be sure to snag it while you can.
Where is it at in Asheville?
It's in downtown Asheville off Battery Park?
It's on the north side.
Yeah, something like that. Battery Street Road. Something.
Battery Park is in New York, isn't it?
I don't know.
That's the name of a park, yeah. It's the one that goes on the outside of the island.
Oh, that's right, because it used to be a battery.
Yep. And if you're not going to make it to Asheville, you could always stop on by NC Comic Con later this month. I will be there selling my wares and meeting and greeting and having a good old time. But we will talk about that more at length in a little bit.
And I'll be doing my best to read words with pictures.
Yes.
Anyway. I don't know what the fuck that means, but I'm just going to smile and nod.
He means read comics. I'm dying because he just put on a face immediately after. It looks like he cultivated it in the mirror over the course of several hours, like Costello style. Like, is this face funny? I don't know. Let me be subtle with it.
Was he mugging?
I honestly don't. I purposely avoid mirrors because my face terrifies me sometimes. Actually, my hair terrifies me most of the time.
Just cut it, man. Show it who's boss. If the clippers win, then...
See, the problem... I normally would keep my hair very short, but the problem is I burn the back of my neck right at the hairline, and the last thing I want is some overzealous barber to go into the back of my neck.
It's pretty obvious you've got a wound back there. I don't think they would do that unless they're like 80 and blind.
It looks like he just exited the Matrix. It's pretty bad.
I use coupons to get haircuts, so you never know what you're gonna get.
Brother, I gotta see this. Let's see the back.
Oh, it's actually healed up very nicely.
I can barely... That doesn't even count.
I know. It healed up very nicely.
It used to look like a butthole.
Get a haircut for being a sissy. Gracious. If you didn't point at it, I wouldn't know it existed.
Let's see. Hold on. Here we go.
Yeah, he got hit by some 3,000 degree spark of some shape or form. Don't know if it was iron or not, but it happened during an iron pour.
Hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess it looks kind of like a burn.
It looks like a cat's butthole.
It really did look like a cat's butthole. Well,
if the cat needs to go to a doctor, yeah.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. It was painful.
All right.
But that's why my hair looks kind of like the white fro.
I grow one of those pretty frequently. I got a haircut just recently because it was starting to happen. I will do the white fro and just let it grow because I don't care and I stay home all the time until I like look in the mirror and I see mullet fringe coming up both sides of my neck.
Oh, you get, see for me it's the ducktails.
I get those too, but those don't bother me.
The little curls. Now, yeah. See, they curl into your ear.
Oh,
for me, they curl into the ear, and I'm just sitting there, just like,
okay, yeah, that would bother me. Very good.
What is the Brady Bunch mom's name?
You've just tuned into the Barbershop podcast.
Well, there's four of us. We ought to start a quartet. Right? Dibs on bass.
Hello.
Damn it, Dutters. I just
have
dibs on bass.
Bop,
bop. Hello.
Fuck you guys.
it's all bass.
Okay, we dropped the bass.
It's all about the bass?
It's the dubstep barbershop quartet.
So, now, why is Gabe here?
Gabe, why are you here?
I drove you.
You like that segue there? It's just like, the hell with this? We're going right into it here.
So, Gabe has recently come out with his book, Purgatory Pub, which is a grouping of comics.
A collection,
compilation.
It's not really a trade so much as it is a graphic novel.
It's book one of a series.
Book one of a series.
And by book we mean like perfect bound, 100 some odd pages, not as
120
46. Sir.
40. God, I think my PDF might have condensed things.
With that being said, you have been a guest on my other show, No Big Two Comic Review.
So if you need the background and the history, just go listen to that.
Yeah. You know, we kind of did your origin story and where, you know, the passion for drawing funny books came from and such.
Funny books. I was amused.
You
calling it funny books?
You two are like, you guys are smitten with each other.
I'm not
going
to look at Duggars anymore.
I don't know what faces I make.
Duggars is the train wreck I can't look away from, and I must.
So you got a new project coming up.
Kind of. It's a continuation. Book one was the first in the series, and now I'm, when this recording gets posted, I will have started kickstarting book two.
It will be Tuesday, so it will be today. Like, didn't you announce that?
Yeah. We're recording this on a Sunday night, and the Kickstarter goes live Tuesday sometime in the morning, hopefully, if I can get my stuff together.
So, tomorrow, for you listening today, Monday.
Nope.
It's tomorrow? No, next week.
If they're listening to it, then it's
today. I have to edit it Monday.
Oh, okay, so we're actually releasing on a Tuesday.
Yes.
So today's Tuesday.
Yes.
For you listeners that are actually on top of things and like to click it open first thing.
Yeah, time travel's a bitch.
Next week today.
Go to
Dude, the last episode, you two had like an entire like 30 minutes of just going back and forth trying to understand how time worked.
All right, so Tuesday, today, you have a Kickstarter launch. What is this Kickstarter for exactly?
Kickstarter's a big glorified way of running a pre-order. Hey, I've got a project. I can't afford to print it. If you give me the money up front, I'll print it and send it to you. And if I can't get enough money, then you get yours back. Like, money does not change hands unless I get enough to make the print run.
Right.
That's Kickstarter in a nutshell, or what it's supposed to be.
So what is your Kickstarter, then?
My Kickstarter is to fund me printing book two. I'm asking for $3,500.
That's like nothing.
Yeah,
come on, people.
In terms of Kickstarter money, it's not that much, and in terms of book printing, it's also not that much. There's an American printer in Pennsylvania that's got good turnaround. His prices are better than China, and I don't have to deal with customs, which sometimes is very smooth and sometimes is a nightmare.
That's I like to hear that. That warms my heart.
When you said that, I'm immediately interested in knowing who this publisher is.
It is Kenes Printing, KENESS.com. It's a digital printer. So they use the same process that print on demand uses. However, most print on demand printers are on the cheaper side. The printers are very robust, but they've got to keep it cheap. So if you're looking at a black and white, your naked eye can spot the dot matrix that makes up the images. So no matter what the resolution, if you've got any gray tone on there at all, your naked eye can see the pixels. Whereas this guy, his machines are much, much tighter. So the black and white looks like a very nice, very, very nice offset printing. My project's in black and white, so this guy is absolutely the way to go. And it's a soft cover, which they don't do hard covers there. But if you were going to do color and you're going to get more than 1,000 printed, like if you want a color book that's going to be cost effective at all, you have to go to China. You can try printers in Canada. I'm sure there are some printers somewhere in Mexico, but I've been looking. I haven't found them yet.
So for those who did not tune into the No Big Two episode yet, can you tell us about Purgatory Pub?
Yeah, sure. When the angel and devil on your shoulder are done harassing you, they go to a bar and they talk about you. Purgatory Pub is where your glass is always half something.
That sounded great.
Nothing. Screw you guys.
Well, Aaron,
actually, I've heard this. I heard that pitch before.
Yeah, you guys have had the misfortune of seeing me at a convention where I have to pitch. And the guy that was tabling next to me heard my pitch 60 times that day, and I thought that it was our first time. I'm talking about Max Miller Dowdle. We tabled next to each other at Heroes Con.
Vest.
Yeah, vest guy. Mm-hmm. He was the dapper chap wearing the button-up mm-hmm. shirt and a vest, and I was dressed like this.
For those of you that can't see, it's a robe.
Yes, and
it's an assless.
It's an open robe.
It is an open robe.
You with know, an ascot.
Look, if y'all don't like the view, you don't have to look directly at me. That's all I'm saying. It's a black and white humor book about the angel and devil who live on your shoulder and try to pull you one direction or the other. The genre is a humorous afterlife fantasy, and there's lots and lots of religion talk in there, and there's also lots of booze, and in book two, lots of playing darts.
Nice.
Sweet book darts.
You were nice enough to send us digital copies of the book, and Dutters and Aaron spent some time reading it over the weekend, and I'm sure you guys had some comments, thoughts.
Yeah, their faces look like I don't want to hear the comments. Before you say anything, I brought like actual books to give you at the end of the night.
I really enjoyed it.
I did too. I have nothing bad to say about it whatsoever.
I had no. I mean, I heard your spiel.
I've heard your spiel
and
too.
To be honest, when most people go into spiel and it's more or less kind of scripted, I do what I always do when most people talk. I just stop listening. So, and I didn't read the cover. I don't read covers because it just boils things down way too much. And so I just started reading, and I really enjoyed it. You went into some topics that I didn't expect to find in your book.
Yeah, that's a comment I get frequently.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed it, especially coming from the background I come from, Catholic school up until college.
Oh,
so it's
man.
Always enjoyable.
Dude, I'm so
to
sorry.
Read some- yeah,
like speaking as somebody a Catholic who still goes to church, that sucks so hard.
And my family was Southern Baptists, so.
Yes, it was written for you as well.
Mm-hmm. And there's so much I can like I'm reading this and I'm just like, ha ha! pretty much every other page is, ha ha!
Just
I know this.
A brief aside, if you want your kids to grow up Catholic, do not send them to Catholic school ever for any reason ever. Just don't do it, man. Don't do it. If you don't care, then yeah, sure, fine, whatever. But, just... I've yet to meet somebody who went to Catholic school and was like, no, this was a great experience for me. I've got myself put together. I'm well-adjusted. I don't have any weird issues. Never met that person.
I was lucky. The school was kind of crazy, but I had very well-adjusted parents.
Oh, right.
I had a great education, and high school was actually a lot better than elementary school. High school was... I actually had great religion teachers. I learned more about other religions than I learned about Catholicism in high school.
Oh, okay.
Which is very uncommon. But... As far as elementary school is a little unusual, a small class size and stuff. I think that's what my parents sent me there, the education.
Okay.
But I was lucky; I had well-adjusted parents when I went home that, you know, cared more about me having fun and, you know, doing what I loved versus, you know, kneeling all the time and standing and then kneeling again,
eating crackers.
Jesus crackers.
Unleavened bread, you cretins.
And we, right before you came over, we were discussing some of the parts of the book that, you know, Aaron really enjoyed and that Dutters really enjoyed. And Aaron, you had, there was an element of the book that you really enjoyed.
Yeah, also Dutters did a lot of talking. Aaron, please, more from you.
I've forgotten
positive or negative
was.
Man.
Oh, okay. Well, let me. I'll get to the element last because that was a very specific thing. You got to stop doing that. He's using a bottle opener shaped like the Death Star as a monocle.
I don't understand how or why this is a problem. I'm not going to destroy you like a planet with my eye. I mean, that's not going to happen.
It's operational, and we didn't know it.
you're correct. So I found
the writing of the book to be extremely clever. It was enjoyable as much as the art illustration. The art I found most endearing because, as a black and white illustrated novel, you had about 4 or 5 frames per page, at least in the digital version.
Oh, you're about right.
Normally, I've read small novels like that before, and they've become very redundant. Like, when it's heavy on dialogue, you've got 2 people talking in most situations. There's a lot of redundant imagery, mm-hmm. the same angles of the face, the same lighting situations, the same non-lighting situations. Yes. There's like just an amorphous whatever is going on in the background. Yours didn't have that. You managed something different with every pane. Even if it was supposed to be the same angle, it was not off-putting the way that it was drawn.
I can't tell you how much that observation means to me over here.
Well, it was impressive to me.
Like that's one of the things that I sweat so hard when I'm drawing.
Well, when I saw that artist style, I came into it expecting that, and it wasn't there, which is great. When I say artist style, I mean comic style. So the writing was something to enjoy. The art was something to enjoy. The character design is something your own. I love that in the end of it, you talked about the original sketches that you used. I think one of the most endearing things that I found in this was the logo for the anti-religious group, the underground, so to speak. The underworld underground, which was just their political logo was hilarious.
The light bulb
with the 666 as the filaments.
It's interesting you bring that up. Actually, that's going to be one of the stretch goals of the Kickstarter, is to get that t-shirt made.
Excellent. Nice. That would be good. That would be a good seller.
Well, you would think so. People don't actually buy t-shirts.
Well, where are you going to get it printed?
There's actually, I'm going to plug another dude. There's a screen printer at the very edge of downtown, Appeal Screen Printing, A-H-P-E-E-L-E.
This is in Garner?
No, it's in Raleigh. It's right at the edge of downtown Raleigh. It's run by Adam and Hiromi Peel, and super sweet folk. I honestly have been seeing that building for ages, and they've got some graffiti on the side from Battle Chasers. Has anyone in this room ever read that comic?
Nope.
It's Joe Mad comic, came out in like 95 or something, so old. And so I see this beautiful spray-painted mural of Battle Chasers on the wall. I'm like, oh, wow, not only... is this, graffiti that took some time. It's a beautiful mural, but somebody went deep with their comic nerddom. So I pulled the car over, got my daughter out of the car, and just walked into the building, not knowing what it was. Because when you're out with your daughter, that's a safe thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this building has lots of graffiti.
Especially in downtown Raleigh. Let's go take a look. you were referencing some of the dilapidated, like, shit structure down there.
Yes, there's so... It's such a weird, it's a really nice town, and like statistically Raleigh's one of the safest places to live, and if you're downtown it's like beautiful building, this is clearly a crack den of some kind, or was recently.
That was actually part of one of my favorite things about the book, was that you did use imagery from downtown Raleigh as a reference to create your own world. I know the dive bar is a take on
Deep South Bar,
and that was really cool, because maybe when I was reading it, I didn't necessarily put 2 and 2 together until the end with the artist notes, and now I'll drive by that bar every day coming home from work, and I'll just like kind of laugh to myself.
Yeah,
it's kind of nice.
And there was a bar on Glenwood called Dive Bar, and then they changed their name to Havoc, and then they recently changed their name again. I don't know, Lotus something.
Lotus?
No, that was the tattoo place that went out of business. I don't know, but it looks really swank now, as opposed to kind of run down. So hey, thanks Adam, I appreciate it. No, Aaron. Sorry. Thanks Aaron, I really no appreciate that. I'd say
this is where I go by daughters.
I got that now. Something that I sweat the whole time that I make the comic, something that I'm sweating really hard while I'm drawing number 2, is it's like, I've got 20 pages of these 2 dudes more or less sitting in the same spot talking. Mm-hmm. And like something you said is like there's lots and lots of repetition. Something else that happens in comics is there's going to be a speech bubble. Like especially if there's lots of dialogue or a monologue, they put it all in one speech bubble and then just one picture of the guy talking at the bottom. And while that saves time, I'm like, there's a lot of exchanges here and each exchange deserves its own emotion.
Yeah.
If you're writing properly, you have to cut out everything that doesn't tell something about the character and serve the story. And if you get your dialogue down far enough that way, then that means every single exchange emotes something. So I have to put, for every panel, there's one exchange, and that makes the page count go way up. So it's like, I've got a million panels of them sitting in the same spot. This is so boring. Why did I write this? Why did I ever do this to myself? Draw, draw, draw. And to find out that the thing that I was sweating so hard, I actually pulled off. I'm like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, there's a lot of subtleties when it comes to the dialogue that are... Dialogue and how it's represented that I could really appreciate. Like, one of the biggest irks that I get about reading comic books of all genres, all shapes and forms, is the chronology of speech bubbles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times, the art can be fantastic and it's just shit upon by these floating shapes.
Yes.
It's usually how they're oriented in the space, or it's covering up something you really want to know what's behind it.
Yeah. Well, would you believe the reason that happens the most is not because of the guy who's putting in the speech bubbles, it's because of the guy who drew the image.
Really?
Yeah, writers, if a comic is made by a writer, and then the art team, and then a letterer, the writer will write 9 panels per page, and every single panel has a paragraph in it.
Yeah.
And then the artist will draw what's happening in that scene. And it's always very, very dense because most comic writers are verbose and they just freaking love writing. So they'll put so much writing into it. And especially like comic culture now is very writer-centric. So the writers are just like, I'm going to shine all over creation. And the poor artist says, I need to sell pages. So let me make this as visually interesting as I can. And by the time it gets to the letterer, the last person in the line, he or she is looking at this script that is so verbose and this art that is usually very busy and like I follow a very rigid grid system in mainstream comics and in superhero comics specifically. There's no grid anymore. It's for more advanced readers who know where to put their eye, so it's very it's visually very
all different ratios of sizes
but
and shapes.
The poor letterer is looking at these two train wrecks and finding some way to marry them together, and sometimes there's just not a whole lot you can do. It's a very nuts and bolts graphic design job where you're constantly problem solving, but you're not picking the right solution to the right problem. You're picking between a shit sandwich and a shit stew.
And then I'm sitting there going 3 pages back, like, wait a minute, I think I read that in the wrong order.
Yeah.
I know.
What? Wait a minute, I completely missed that. What's... Oh, no, man.
And you're taken out of the story and the whole thing's ruined. It's like, it's on the one hand, it's, oh, this beautiful reveal I made to myself. Wait, I should have been reading it this way the whole time. This whole thing is ruined. Yeah. And like,
Wait a minute, that's who said that? Yeah. I didn't know that. Wait a minute, no, I thought that was someone else who said that.
I like to think of it as a choose your own adventure.
No.
So you do, you have your own series of, communication, like we got the podcast, but you do something a little different on your off time. You do a webcast, a video cast.
Yeah, I do a video cast. I'll tell you right now, I freaking stole the hell out of this idea from an illustrator named William Terrell.
Mm-hmm.
Will Terrell, excuse me. W-I-L-L-T-E-R-R-E-L-L. 2 R's, 2 L's. Beautiful illustrator. You guys freaking love him. So good. And like imagine like Bob Ross and Mr. Rogers had a jolly fat bearded baby who could draw and just loved everybody. So he turns on his camera over his drawing board while he's inking or throwing some colors down on a live sketch that he did that looks beautiful. And he's talking about a topic that means something to him at that moment.
Sure.
Like he was talking about networking. And he said something that really resonated with me. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. And I have him on while I was drawing. And I'm getting really inspired about life, not so much about art, by this guy who's just very jolly and is giggling at his own drawings. I'm like, look at this old lady. Look how adorable she is. So it's like, oh, man, I want to do this for somebody else. Because he stopped after a while. He was like, I've got a time-lapse app on my iPhone. I've got a drawing table. Why don't I do this? So I've made a video cast. I'm 8 episodes in. where I you can see a time lapse of me either inking or inking and graying, just a junk drawing. And what this does for me is, like, up until I started this video cast, I stopped junk drawing altogether. It's like, if I'm drawing, then it needs to be in the comic, because if I'm going to clear 140 pages in a year, I need to go now.
Right.
And for those of you at home, 140 comic pages in a year, if that's not your full-time job, that's a big deal. That's a lot. Most people who have a day job, it takes them a year and a half, 2 years to clear that.
Yeah, it's what, like minimum 15 hours per page or something?
Something like that. For me, I've got it a minimum of 8 because I've got more of a sparse cartoon style. So it forces me to do more junk drawing, and my art has gone way up. I've actually done some things that I'm so proud of. The next time I update my portfolio, I'm putting them in there. Inktober has been very good for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And the video cast is called Finding Your Voice, and the idea is that the reason, like, I picked up 2 comics, and one of them, the artwork is this very beautiful, realistic, true crime book, and the other one is a very, very cartoony book that looks like a Think Regular Show or Adventure Time, like one of those cartoony things. And in terms of making a value judgment between these two artists, it's like there's no value judgment. I'm looking at them like they're both at the top of their game. Like, I look at super gritty, hard-boiled crime artwork, and then I'm looking at happy-go-lucky cartoons, and what I'm seeing is two people who have found their niche. It's like, it's not, I decided to go in this direction because I would get more money, or because here's the niche that wasn't being served at the time. It was, if I'm being real with myself, this is what's inside of me. I like the gritty crime guy says, I really like details. I like playing with camera angles. Whereas the super cartoony person says, I love fluid lines. I like messing with figures and taking them off model. And I like just raw imagination on the page. And I noticed, like, when I've been on both sides of hiring and trying to be hired for my illustrations. And when I'm looking to, when I was an art director for 2 issues of a magazine, I was looking at illustration portfolio after portfolio and realizing, on one hand, what things I'm actually looking for, why some people get hired and some don't, and why I'm getting hired sometimes and not getting hired for others. Because, like, I'll find somebody's portfolio and I think they're good, they're onto something, I will never hire this person with this portfolio.
And then you forget about them the next day.
Yeah, and the problem is, like, they're good, it's not bad art, but this is not them. They're aping somebody's style, or it's obvious that they haven't finished putting in the hours. They haven't finished doing all of the junk drawing and all of the exploring. So they're on their way, but they're not there. And the goal, what people are after, is just finding their voice, finding the thing that is very much them. And in exploring the thing that you do for other people, your art, your craft, just something that you do that gives value to everyone else. You learn a lot about yourself. You become much more comfortable with yourself. So, like, I read this one psychiatrist blog. And her advice for so many people who are having lots of neurotic depression problems is, like, well, what's a skill that you have? What's something that you do that you're really proud of? And almost every one of her patients who comes to her with, I'm so depressed, it's like, I don't actually have any. I mean, I got good grades in school, and I'm out of school. There's usually people our age. Like, I got good grades in school, got good grades in college, I've got a great job now. I don't actually do anything. It's like, well, here's your cure, pick up the guitar. If you don't like the guitar, pick up something else, anything else. It doesn't matter.
Right.
Just find a skill and build it. And as soon as you start doing that deliberately, your life turns around. And so, like, when I'm making this video cast, it's like, I'm trying something new over here. And here's what I'm going through. This is really positive for me. Maybe you should try something new in your life.
So where can people find the video cast again?
YouTube. You go to YouTube, type in my name, Gabriel Dunstan, and Finding Your Voice.
You got a Twitter out there, don't you?
Yeah, at Pookie G, POOKEYG. In the video cast, I'm only 8 episodes in, so it'll be a little bit harder to find. When I get 10 episodes in, I'm going to work.
Well, they can follow you on Facebook, and then you post them on the Facebook.
Exactly. Just there find my name and friend me, and drop me a message that says, I heard you on the podcast. Be like, oh, okay, sure, we're friends.
That's all it takes. And, yeah. And how can people find where to donate, or, I'm sorry, pledge for Purgatory Pub?
Go to Kickstarter, type in Purgatory Pub or Purgatory Pub Book 2 into the search, and I'll be there.
And what about if they want to buy book one?
If you want to buy book one, you can find me at NC Comic Con. You can find me at Richmond, Virginia, at the Virginia Comic Con, and the weekend immediately after NC Comic Con. You can get the ebook off of Gumroad, or you can get it from Amazon. If you can't do any of those things for some reason, send me a message. Tell me where your comic shop is, and I can mail something to your comic shop. I can do a signing at your comic shop, or I'll say, here's the list of conventions I'm doing next year. Find me. And if you get it from me personally, I will sign the inside, and I've got a little embosser, so I'll put a seal on your book.
Nice.
Official. Yeah, it's official. And the seal says certified awesome. So you can, when you tell people, nice. I'm awesome, you can show the documentation proving it so.
Excellent.
All for a low, low price.
Yeah, book one and two is $15 flat.
Nice.
Which, for indie comic, it's the best I can do, y'all. Sorry.
Well, we're going to wrap up this episode with, I think we've elected to do an artthetical.
Yes, we elected.
Isn't that correct, Aaron?
Yes. Actually, no, we're going to sit here thought as we contemplate, why are we doing this? And what is it doing for other people?
All right, so this artthetical is, of course, once again brought to us by Chuck Klosterman's hypothetical 50 questions for the Insane Conversations. This one...
I want to hear your breathing.
Make love to this mic.
I've got it. All right. Your best friend is taking a nap on the floor of your living room. Suddenly, you are faced with a bizarre existential problem. He or she is going to die unless you kick this slumbering friend as hard as you can in their ribcage. If you don't do this, he or she will never wake up. However, you can never explain your actions. If later you inform your friend that you did this to save his or her life, your friend will die from that. So, you have to kick a sleeping friend in the ribs, and you cannot explain why. Since you cannot tell your friend the truth, what excuse will you fabricate to explain this seemingly inexplicable attack?
All right, Darius, what's your answer?
My answer to this is, it's the simplest answer ever. I kick my friend, they wake up, they go, dude, why the hell did you do that? I was like, you're fucking in my way.
Okay,
I think it's beyond that, though. I think it's like you add, like, bodily injury to said roommate or friend.
I am pretty much accepted as being an asshole. And if I've got at least three beer cans hanging around me, then they probably are just going to expect it.
It does kind of work in your favor.
It really does work in my favor. Or I could just be like, dude, I didn't see you. I tripped. Sorry, man. I wear steel toes. You'll live.
If you wear steel toes, they might not live.
Yeah, you may be.
I just saved them. I just resuscitated their heart.
I think you just killed them anyway.
It's apparently, like, until I tell them the truth.
You saved them from some horrible
that's it.
Their heart with ribs.
I just figured it out. What happens? I save them, right? They wake up. They start giving me a hard time. What do I do? Guess what, buddy? I actually just saved your life. Bam, they're dead.
So.
Damn, sir. Never saved my life. Just let me go,
just
man.
Just let you die.
You two are going to give your answers, and then I'm going to rephrase the final question into an art-related question.
Bullshit, you're going to give us your answer. Then you can...
No, I'm going to give you my answer last because I don't have an answer to this. I have a true story very similar to this.
Oh, okay.
It's even better.
I got it. I'm fine. Aaron over here, he's our showstopper.
Yep.
So my options are kick the friend or they just die?
Yes. Yeah.
You know what, guys? I couldn't do it. I just let them die.
I mean, you also got to wonder, whatever's killing them... Maybe they just need to go.
Could be.
You know what? I'm for the second episode in a row, I'm going to mention Aqua Teens. There's a scene where Meatwad has Happy Time Harry, this really depressed doll. He's drunk. He's blackout drunk and he's vomiting on his back.
Mm-hmm.
Frontlet comes over and says, flip him over. That's how Hendrix died. Meatwad said, oh, just leave him. He's going to die soon anyway. You're Meatwad in that scene. That's horrible.
Yep.
Adam is a horrible person.
You're not the first person to call me Meatwad.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
All right.
I don't get that, so given your body type.
I don't know. I just thought it was kind of a funny thing to say at the moment.
You could see a doctor about that one.
Yeah, right. All right, Gabe, what do you got?
I'd kick him in the ribs, and I'd be like, he was under a blanket. Sorry, dude. I thought I was doing that thing where you're like, I didn't want to lean over and pick it up, so I was like doing this kickflip thing to catch the blanket. You happen to be under there, and I'm really, really sorry. Let's take you to the hospital because I have powerful, powerful fat man legs. So you are clearly in distress. I will take care of the bill for you.
Wow, that was like nice.
Yeah.
All right, Aaron.
I have prepared for every contingency.
In the internal words of Grey's Anatomy, how do you save a life?
In why, man? Why would you?
Did the lady from that show that looks like a perpetually sad Asian say that?
Yes.
She really does.
Yeah, she's like sad all the fucking time.
I have no idea who you're talking about. I've watched 10 minutes of that show.
It could be a surprise birthday party and there's confetti and clowns everywhere. And
I've seen a picture of that actress giving a very genuine smile, like a very genuine, I just had a baby girl, how great is this smile? Mm. And you're exactly like from the nose up, I'm like, what happened to you?
Anyway, we're way off subject. I'm going to rephrase this statement. You guys are going to answer it, and then I'm going to give that little true story that I have.
Break
so,
it down.
Your best friend is taking a nap on the floor of your living room. You've had it up to here with a particular piece of art that they have hanging on their wall. I cannot say what it is, but you wake them up to the sound of you destroying the shit out of whatever it is. What is that piece of art, and how do you justify it?
Well, is it their art?
Yes.
It's
something they own.
Oh, you mean of all their... Well, how am I to know what the art is? It's theirs.
You make it up.
It's a hypothetical art.
You're in their house. You are in their house. There's something on their wall that you've seen because you've been over a lot.
Well, does it matter? Like maybe to them it doesn't really matter either? Well, I guess if it's on their wall, they clearly care about it.
It's in the same vein as you waking
up. I just let them die.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
fine. All right. What is the artwork? God, it... I'm a very tolerant person of what other people deem art and put in their houses. So it would have to be... I don't even think it would... No, because offensive would probably amuse me. So it would have to be beyond offensive. Maybe a nude picture of my... No, not even a nude... A pornographic photograph of a family member. Like, one of my family members. They're like this gonzo pornographic pseudo-artist person. And they somehow got, like, they went and stole images of a sibling or something and created, like, gonzo pornographic artwork with it.
That clearly has never been in my coat closet before.
I mean, that could be the only, like, I'm trying, like, I'm, because for me to be offended by something that someone else has in their house, like, it has to go above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And my imagination is having trouble finding something that would offend me to that extent. My excuse for... I wouldn't have to excuse myself. I'd probably just kill them afterwards. Just kick them in the ribs afterwards.
Fair enough.
Now, in this scenario, like the scenario that you just gave us, it's like the friend has passed out. Now you can destroy something in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And their toilet. Like, ideally, we'd think, I can destroy this with impunity. But then they wake up and you have to explain yourself. So, it seems like you've got a couple questions going at once. Like, one, what kind of art can you just not deal with? I think it's the real question you're asking the three of us.
Not necessarily. No, it has to be, think of your best friend.
Okay. Yeah.
Single one out. They have a work of art in their room that you cannot stand whatsoever. And in context to this question, you wake them up by destroying it.
Okay.
So it is kind of a double question.
And there's no reason, like there's no, they're not going to die in this scenario?
No.
Okay, so just
I'm still just letting
them. I'm in someone else's house, and I just tried to destroy one of their things. Not just somebody else, somebody I like a lot.
Yeah,
apparently.
Yeah. So it's gotta be really horrible.
Am I that I'm doing this?
It's gotta be a really shitty piece of art.
This is. I mean, honestly, I feel like it's a life or death. I feel like if that's the situation, like, you know, a demon has come in to
you fear my, for their creative. I don't know.
Like, having this piece of artwork in there, hang in their house, is stifling their creativity?
Sure.
Like, if I do not destroy this person will never move on with life.
It's causing creative cancer to them, and you can see it, but they can't.
I know. Maybe. No, I can't even begin to...
I know people who are going through their own little creative cancers, and the answer is they get to live their own damn life. Like, just the level of asshole I'd have to be. I tell you what kind of art that I would...
So in a sense, you would let them die as well.
In this particular case, I don't know that I would actually destroy this, but, like, something that does... give me no small amount of pause is like there's the serial killer artifacts, like John Wayne Gacy was executed and somebody took the shirt he was executed in, cut it into little swatches, mounted them with a picture authenticating, like, no, check it out, it's a shirt, I cut it. And those are mounted and framed and in circulation in a certain vein of collectors and like stuff like that. It's like, this is, it's like, oh boy, someone is a rock star because they were a horrible, horrible murderer, but they're given glorification. Like, not just, oh, this is interesting, here's an artifact of an interesting figure. It's like, no, that's, for a lot of people, that's true. But for a lot of people, that is a veil. Like, almost every serial killer, as soon as they're caught and as soon as there's a picture, it's on the cover of every magazine, it's on the headline of every newspaper.
You know, it's the typical celebrity pedestal.
Yeah, I mean, we
love turning assholes into cultural icons.
Yeah, and so, like, if you're gonna put Kanye does just the most douchebag thing ever, and suddenly he's a headline, be like, whatever, that's entertainment news, somebody did a douchebag move, I don't like it, but I don't care. But no, I know the names of the Columbine killers. I know their faces. Why do I know this? Why does anybody like, why do we know the name and face of the Sandy Hook shooter? These people knew they were not going to get what they wanted in life, but they knew that if they killed themselves and took a lot of people with them in as a rough a way as they could think of, then they'd get, in death, they'd get exactly what they want. And here, we the living are, is like, here you go. So, if I were to destroy anything, I would find the typesetter who's about to put the photo onto the newspaper that's about to go out, and I would punch him clear in the throat, nothing fatal, just enough so that he's out of breath and over there coughing while I fuck up his shit and he can't make that happen, and then casually walk away. And
then the editor fires him for not finishing his job.
No, all you do is you put victims up.
Yeah, and I'm not against. I'm not against throat punching multiple people in the same newsroom.
Well, you could easily kill somebody like that.
No, the caveat was that it's not a fatal punch in the throat.
Do I have a piece?
Do you have a piece that you would destroy?
Yeah, what's your?
I would say it would have to be a print, a nice quality print of any Jeff Koons sculpture.
Sorry, I do not.
He and his assistants make. Monumental scale sized balloon animals that are made out of metal and they're fucking shiny as shit.
How do these people get assistants? Like, how does any artist get an assistant? Because I'd sure like one.
Money.
Now, surely, because, like, I know a lot of artists where the assistant came before the money.
You find that one assistant that the two of you really work well together, and then with that assistant, and you pay that assistant next to nothing, but you offer that assistant space to work on their own stuff, and that assistant sees that as payment enough, and the two of you work side by side. That assistant allows you to make more and more of your work, giving you more time to put yourself out there. So the time you used to spend in a studio working, that's the time you're now spending.
That part you don't have to sell me on. It's actually finding the schlub to be like, hey, spend all of your time and energy glorifying me so that I can go out and glorify me some more too. And then
there's a lot of desperate.
To bring both of those scenarios together, I've heard of several people that are in the situation Richard just said. They're given the space and the ability to work under a guy that's, you know, gaining popularity, is very experienced as an artist. And there's also the promise of pay, but they never actually get paid until years afterwards or so.
Okay.
Artists are very gullible in the sense that they will jump on the chance to have a facility to work. Mm. And the promise that all artists are good-hearted and good-natured and will, you know, pat each other on the back in the end. But
I take a small issue. It's like, no, gullible artists are gullible, but to say artists are gullible.
I think, like, we all are.
I disagree, sir.
There's got to be some area where all of us have that fault.
Disagree, but we can talk about that later. Okay. Like, we will have fun times.
Sure.
Like, there's the yarn going around. It's like, especially in comic artists, like, oh, comic artists are such introverted people. That's why they spend all their hours alone drawing. Like, no, this is not the case.
No, you clearly have sun on your skin.
I'm sorry?
I said you clearly have sun on your skin.
Yes, that's from taking the daughter to the park. But, like, and there's outside. Yeah. There's other artists I know who, like, they go to the cons, they're like, oh, it's so nice to be out and talking to people, like, lots and lots, so that stereotype needs to go the hell away. Moving on. So that's the art you would destroy. Tell us your other story.
Did you give your answer yet?
Yes.
Okay.
He was first.
Yeah, that's right. Sorry. So in the original phrasing of this question, there's a friend taking a nap on your floor and you kick them in the ribs to wake them up. So Adam and I live together in an apartment complex in Greenville.
Oh, no, you're not telling that story, are you?
With two other roommates, one of which we were pretty cool with. The other was a shit show. If he listens to this podcast, I'm sorry, but it's a true fact.
I don't even know if that dude's like...
Really hope you got your life together, buddy.
God. I don't know if that dude is like a free alive. Man to listen to podcasts.
Who knows?
Oh, I want to hear so many more stories.
He might be in jail.
That's what I'm thinking.
This guy was about 7 feet tall and is a very fun guy, but he made some bad life choices. One of which was these two high school friends that he had that he would invite down from Virginia Beach. And they basically brought a third person with them each time in the form of a 4.5 foot tall glass bong. It was probably $6,000 worth of blown glass there. But they would bring this fucking thing down and they would just destroy our entire apartment. They would go on like these marathon smoking sessions that would last until the wee hours of the morning. And they would just pass the fuck out with like the title screen of a DVD just playing throughout the rest of the night.
Oh, man.
There'd be fucking paper plates and like McDonald's wrappers and ketchup and mustard smeared all over each other. And this happened several times. And we would all wake up the next morning and go to class. And we would see just the destruction from the night before. There'd be this nasty, lingering, acrid fucking dookie smell.
Was not fun.
Yeah, after... Weed smell can be good initially, but then it turns into like this armpit.
In every band practice I've ever been to, it hasn't been fun.
Yeah.
Like I'm behind the kit, I'm playing, and then I was like, oh man, what smells like battery acid that died? Oh,
damn it. These two friends of his were practically a Tweedledee Tweedledum scenario. One guy was tall and skinny, looked a lot like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. The other guy was short and fat, and their attitudes matched.
Nice.
All three of us go to sleep one night and they're just, you know, fucking noisy as shit throughout the night. I don't get much sleep. I have class at 8 in the morning. I have sculpture class at 8 in the morning. Joe, our other roommate, has class at the same time. We usually meet each other at the foot of the stairs when I'm on my way out and he's getting coffee. It just so happens he got up a little bit early that morning and I walk into the living room and I'm just standing there, mouth agape, looking around at the destruction everywhere. There's the bong sitting in the middle of the floor. There's food and shit everywhere. There's the fat guy asleep on the couch. Skinny guy, I assume, was up in the guest bedroom because sometimes he slept up there. I see Joe over at the foot of the stairs. He's looking at me. I'm looking at him. And we're just like, oh my fucking God, this has to stop.
I was locked in my room probably like hiding from this chaos.
Yeah, I don't think you had class until like around 9 or 10 or so.
I locked myself in the room a lot.
But I just look at Joe and I'm like, I mouth, you know, what the fuck? And I just throw my hands up in the air and I'm wearing my steel-toed boots because I have sculpture class that I'm about to go to. I haven't even had my coffee yet. I haven't had my first cigarette of the day. So I walk up to the first initial pile of shit that's just laying in the middle of the floor, which is a giant blanket with a bunch of wrappers all over it. And I just kick the fucking shit out of it. It just so happens that guy, the skinny guy, was laying under there, spread eagle practically. And I connected right in the middle of his nuts with a steel-toed boot. And all I feel is my foot like stop dead. And like I kind of jerk forward. And what happens is the sheet like raises up so fast that it goes flying off of this guy's torso. And he just looks at me in complete and utter like dazed, glazed over. I'm not actually alive, but my eyes are open and I'm breathing. And he just looks at me and he goes, ah! Like, probably like a 3 second delay or something. And he starts like rolling around and he's like, what the fuck, man? What the fuck? And he's like, it was so bad. I was so embarrassed. And Joe just has this shocked look on his face. And I didn't have any response other than to just say, I just shrugged my shoulders and walked back in my room and left out the back door.
No, man.
He probably just saved his life. You know?
I mean, he was about to, like, his brain was about to go dead, and then you shocked him to
life.
You
know what it was? Like, if it wasn't for you giving him a steel toe to the nuts, like, he would have continued the path that he was on, got into meth, got arrested, ended up some prison bitch, and then ultimately got shanked in the shower and bled out naked. Because
you know that guy's gonna rat someone out. And
he now works for a politician.
Yeah, working that night, he went back to law school. He got his degree. You know, work in politics. He's got a wife and two kids. You saved that motherfucker's life.
I also sterilized him.
Which is another way.
They're adopted kids.
They're adopted. Yeah. Or no, they're two pugs that they just, you know, like to call their babies.
They're four-legged babies.
Okay, see, in that moment, that why would you do that moment, you've got two options. Like, you chose the third option. I would die for you to choose one of these two. The number one is the, oh, dude, I'm so sorry. I thought it was just a blanket. I'm sorry. Item number two is to just double down. And be like, if I find you down here again when I get back from class, I'm doing it again. The next kick is in your face, motherfucker. Peace. And then throw out the double deuce and go to your room.
Well, thankfully, only one of those things happened, which was the 7-foot-tall Mongoloid roommate confronted me. Like, I had no response to that situation. I felt really bad about it. I honestly did. Because I could have really injured that guy. I could have hit him in his coccyx and, you know, broke his...
You could have kicked him in the face.
I could have broke his pelvis, actually. I mean, with steel-toed boots. Moral of the story is, those fuckers never came back.
Ah, well done.
I never saw him again.
Well done. That's a good story.
The next one will be better.